How difficult is it to operate energy-efficient buildings and reduce costs? UW River Falls has responded to the greening of America by establishing the St. Croix Institute for Sustainable Community Development, writes Chancellor Don Betts. It's important to understand, he says, it's both a think tank and a do tank. Many communities in the St. Croix Valley in western Wisconsin have called upon UW River Falls faculty and other personnel for years, he says, to help address issues of growth, land use, education, economic, and business development. So if you want to see the university's example of the plan to go off the grid by 2012, the new University Center is one example. It's reduced energy consumption by an estimated 40%. The challenge, though, is much bigger than one building. What about the old buildings and budget shortages? How is the Western Wisconsin community joining forces with the university to reduce everyone's so-called footprint on the environment? But if this is about global warming, aren't there some who are convinced that it's just not happening? Well, we'll talk about it all this hour. You can join our conversation as well. This is The West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. Don Betts is chancellor at UW River Falls, and he's joining us from his office this afternoon. Welcome to you.
Hi, Mary Jo. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good.
Two times in 1 week. It's nice to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity again.
Kelly Kane is here. He is a professor in environmental science and management and is director of the St. Croix Institute for Sustainable Community Development. He also helps coordinate a master's degree program in that field. Welcome to you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Eric Wickstrom is his student in the first Sustainable Community Development Master's Degree Program. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Anastasia Charton is the Visual Arts Director at the Phipps Center for the Arts, and she's in Hudson, where sustainability events and lectures have been organized for the entire community. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you for having us, Mary Jo.
Kelly Kane, could you take us on a little short walk around your new University Center? Give us a little sense of how its energy use is different than other new buildings.
The new building is really the epitome of a green design building, one that is making that building probably one of the greenest in the state, at least at this point. So if you think about it, if you've never been on the UWRF campus, but if you think of many college campuses in which you have a central green corridor around which many of the buildings stand. And so think of this building from a north-south perspective. And on the north side, which is on the core the transportation side, the center of the campus, you have a building that looks very much like the other buildings that already exist. They're predominantly brick, squarish, but at the same time, you have a very large, welcoming entry that is all glass for about three stories, but then the rest of that building has a limited amount of glass because it is on the south side. So from that design standpoint, both aesthetic as well as energy-wise. As you move around to the east side, you have mostly the loading docks and then the and the parking lot that is also built with a very green design in terms of capturing stormwater runoff. And as you work around to the south side, it becomes a very different building. Imagine a very large semicircular sort of shape that is designed for maximizing passive solar gain that is predominantly of limestone and predominantly of glass with a tremendous amount of wood timbers that extend out. And the overhang on the south side of the building being calculated and designed in order to minimize the amount of solar gain that it gets during the summer months and then maximize it during the winter months. Mm-hmm. And then moving up around the west side where it is, moves closer to the education building, again, you get that transition back. Also on the south side is a large outdoor fire pit. And circular seating around which there's some really innovative sorts of programming that has already been occurring and will continue to occur. And that entire south side overlooks the South Fork of the Kinnikinnick River that flows through the entire campus. And so it is really congruent with our perspective of our responsibility to that river as well as the aesthetic parallel that it holds.
You have a white roof?
We have a white roof that minimizes the amount of heat gain, so especially in terms of air conditioning during the summer. And as well, it collects virtually all the rainwater that falls onto that roof and then collects into a 48,000-gallon cistern system. And the cisterns are actually, the tanks are actually underground that are then used to flush the toilets within the building. Mm-hmm. Within the building, you find a wide variety of technologies, everything from motion-sensitive sensors in every room in terms of lights as well as in terms of the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. So if there's no activity in that room, not only do lights go out, but also do the fans and the heating and other ventilation that's not necessary. Materials within the student center, many of them are reclaimed from the building that had been on that site previously. So the Ames Education Building, where we had really nice stone lintels that were around the windows, were pulled out and actually used now for bench seating and other arrangements, as well as the metal columns that are now used as frames for some of the tables in the main lobby, and certified wood for all of the wooden furniture that's in the building, low volatile organic compound off-gassing for paints and carpets, that sort of thing.
So, Chancellor Betts, going off the grid as your university is doing then and building these kind of things, I guess we're not literally assuming you're going to pull a plug, are you?
Well, no, I think if we did, the lights would go out. And we don't want that to happen. Actually, Governor Doyle's initiative last August, I think, picked up on a very strong emerging initiative, not just in the United States, but beyond, to be more proactive in living in a world where energy is not only going to cost more, but traditional energy, but also be less expensive, more expensive. So going off the grid by 2012, I think, had a nice ring to it. And the four of us, the four institutions that agreed to participate in the governor's initiative, we're really talking about finding ways to offset the use of energy, including, very importantly, buying green blocks of energy for a certain specific period of time over time that would allow us to draw on those generators of power that are not based on fossil fuels. And I'm very pleased to say that our students, just incredibly visionary, thought about this in advance when they were coming up with the funds in order to create that building, and came up with an extra $1 million to make sure it included some of the features that Kelly was just describing, and then continued to support the buying of green blocks. And our strategy will be over time is to increase the purchase of those green blocks, at the same time being quite vigorous in pursuing alternative ways that we can produce energy. It's not about, you know, freezing in the winter and boiling in the summer. It's about harnessing different sources of power that are out there. And Kelly has been instrumental, along with others, in the emerging, very exciting relationship between Wisconsin Public Power, River Falls Municipal Utility, and the university. And we are going to be a pilot community for WPPI, working so closely in this triangular relationship. Not just about the university, it's really about what communities will do and can do to really take control of their future, and that's what makes it exciting. And I tell you, there are people responding in this community who I think a few years ago weren't even aware of these issues, even though it's quite a savvy community when it comes to issues of power and issues of being concerned about preserving, being good stewards of the land.
Now, doing some of these things isn't necessarily cheaper, is it?
Initially, it's not. I mean, in some areas, and again, Kelly has many more specifics than I do, but I can tell you from a public policy side of things, no, it's not. Sometimes renewable blocks cost more, but I know that River Falls is a leader. The city community is a leader in buying these renewable blocks, even though it does cost them more, because they believe in the importance of the development of these alternatives. And
I guess the budget shortage is what I'm wondering about. Has the UW budget put any restraints on what you want to do?
Well, we are responsible for, you know, our own power needs, et cetera, within the budgets that we have. And given the governor's directive and his interest, we're looking forward to some opportunities to receive some additional funds along the way, not just to pay for current power, but to develop new resources. I think that's one way that the state could really advance the story. These four campuses can serve as model laboratories for trying a whole range of opportunities, that some of which will work well, like we know from any kind of research, and others that won't, but in the process really help not just the institution, but the communities in the state sort out what kind of power needs we will have in the future and how we will meet those power needs.
I know you've signed the American College and University's President's Climate Commitment. It's urging all campuses across the country to pledge to be leaders in sustainability and other environmental initiatives. I'm wondering, are we making the assumption here at UW-River Falls that global warming is, in fact, totally proven? Are we moving in when I say that, I know there are scientists who say this is junk science. It's not the case. And are we making the assumption here in a higher education that it is the case? Global warming is, in fact, happening?
Well, before Kelly answers it authoritatively, let me say something about it.
Well, I'm talking philosophically here as the head of this university.
Yes. That's how I want to answer it. How I want to answer it is this way. That I have a personal and I think a well-founded sense that global warming is a phenomenon that is part of the world in which I and certainly my grandson is going to live. But it goes beyond that. It really talks about in what ways will we choose to use what we have? Can we afford in any sense, whether it's philosophical, moral, political, or financial, to be abusers or appropriate users of the resources that we have? This institution is saying we are going to be great stewards of the land and of each other in order to create the kind of communities we want to live in. But again, Kelly is much more articulate and much more well-versed on this story than I am, but I have this commitment, and the university has publicly pledged itself to this commitment.
And what, in the next, by 2012, what are you going to need to do what you want to do?
Well, we're going to need us to be able to collaborate even more with the community that we're in and the other communities that we work very closely with in the St. Croix Valley. We're going to need public awareness to astronomically increase, because that is going to be the strongest impetus toward a change in public policy. And we have to be able to articulate the message and provide the information and the access that people need in order to be able to fully understand the dimensions of what we're talking about here, which is about climate, it's about stewardship of resources, and it's about the creation of the communities we will live in.
And there are probably some who say, how come this has taken you so long? I mean, they're both sides of this, right?
Well, those are saying what takes too long is that in the world of higher education, we are a deliberative and reflective bunch. And maybe it takes us a little longer than some of the first pathfinders that were speaking about this, but you know, River Falls and the others, we're in the first group of 240 American universities that will be joining with international institutions to address some of these issues. And I see great opportunities for us to learn from our partners abroad as well.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining this part of our program.
Well, thank you. Wonderful to talk with you again, Mary Jo, and I'm going to put you in much better hands with the other
people. Well, I don't know about that.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Don Betts is the chancellor at UW-River Falls. It looks like he threw these tough questions to you, Kelly Kane.
Where do you want to start?
Well, this whole idea of global warming. Now, is this at the center of a lot of this conversation that we're having? We've got to make some changes on the footprint that we're making in the environment.
Correct. And it is. It is at the center, although there are many issues. You can't pull on any one issue without tugging on all of them to some degree. So the idea of talking about climate change without also talking about peak energy and peak oil is almost impossible if you're really going to understand that issue. But from the standpoint of climate change, the data and the trend analysis is very clear about what is happening. The scientific process, as it is designed, is never 100% certain about anything. All you do is narrow down the possibilities of the predictions of what is occurring in a particular phenomenon based upon a certain level of confidence, depending on study design and how many times it's been done and replicated and similar results found by by other scientists replicating each other's studies. But clearly, the scientific community around the world, if you look at virtually every National Academy of Science in virtually every country, that is fully on board that this is the reality.
So students who would disagree with that would have a chance to voice that opinion, or would they get instruction?
Oh, certainly. I think that's it's very important to have that conversation and to address those differences in viewpoint. But it is also equally important to talk about the reason for why anyone particularly thinks that. I was just giving a talk in Atlanta this past week, and it was a room full of professional people at two other universities, and presented all of the data, certainly not all the data, but a broad swath of that data. And one person walked up to me after the meeting and said, you know, you can present all the data you want to, but I just don't believe this. And some people simply choose not to for whatever reason. I mean, it could be religious, it could be political, it could be, you know, they just don't want to face what that might mean. I have no idea what all those reasons are.
Well, let me ask Eric Wickstrom. You're in the master's degree program. Oh, and Kelly, you were named just today. You started as director of this program.
Formally started today as director of the St. Croix Institute for Sustainable Community Development. We've been working on it for quite some time, but we've had the master's program for about 2 years.
And that's what you're in, Eric. Why?
Why? why? Good question. I graduated with a degree in zoology back in 2001, and I actually had spent quite a bit of time exploring what I was interested in within zoology, is what I'd graduated with, and just figuring out how to apply it in a more realistic setting. Working with people, I really enjoy that, and I'd spent a lot of time soul searching and figuring out how to apply this more at a community level, my interests, and I had stumbled into this program while also looking into an education program at UW River Falls.
So if I say to you, what is sustainability?
Oh.
The quiz.
The
it's quiz time.
Right. Yes.
Well, you know, sometimes it's a term that is, it's hard to grab, get your arms around.
I agree. Are you asking me for my definition or the definition?
You know, how do you define it? I mean, I'm looking at one that says using resources today in such a way that we can meet our needs without compromising the ability of people in the future to meet their needs. Is that the definition you use?
Yeah. Yes. Leave the campfire cleaner than when you found it.
Okay. Give us some more examples of that. Yeah.
On how to?
Pick up the garbage as you're going, that kind of thing?
Oh, it's the possibilities are limitless as far as how detailed you can take it.
What kind of projects have you been working on this year?
In the community development program, I'm supposed to pick a municipality of my choosing.
Okay.
Growing up in western Wisconsin, I'm choosing St. Croix County. And I'm actually personally interested in transportation and local food stores. So
it's 1-800-228-5615 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-228-5615. Well, let me ask Anastasia Charton. You're not with the university.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, I'm with the FIP Center for the Arts in Hudson, and we're an art center, regional art center, and I became involved about...
It seems like an odd combination.
Doesn't it seem like an odd? I get the question all the time is, what are we doing with this? But about 6 years ago or so, we presented an exhibition called Uncanny Visions, contemporary artists' work looking at the impact of human presence on the land. And when that exhibition was being organized, we sort of came across Terry Brown, who is still at the university, and she said, I think this would be a great topic of conversation. We've got, lots of people at the university who really would like to talk about land use issues. And so can we do this as a community forum? And so inspired by the exhibition, then we had this broader conversation about the watershed and about the impact of our use of the land on the water here in the St. Croix Valley. And the success of that kind of encouraged then for the university and the FIPS and the St. Croix Valley Community Foundation to continue to work together and present annual community forums. And there has always been an art component to that. There's always been an exhibition that the community forum related to that was planned, or an exhibition that the topic of the community forum inspired. So there, we have, for the past about 6 years, done that. I think it was about 3 years ago that we started a series of artist conversations talking about experience of place. What is it about the St. Croix Valley? Why do you live here? What then, as an artist, what impact does this place have on you as an artist?
Does a lot of this have to do with the fact that you're growing so much in that part of the state, and your so-called footprint on the environment is probably a bear paw, and what you'd like to have a puppy print or what? I don't know. What? How would you?
Well, most definitely. And I think, you know, part of the experience of place, too, the things that connect us to the place, why we choose to live here. You know, this was a, you know,
yeah,
groups of
artists.
Yeah,
there's too many people. We don't want that. Well, we don't want any more, do we?
Well, and it became the conversation of, well, you know, then a conversation about community and cultivating community. So the year after, then, we had conversations about cultivating community and how can we bring people together. Well, the arts are an amazing way of bringing people together. You know, the FIPS Center for the Arts, we have hundreds of thousands of hours of volunteer time that go into supporting our programs at the FIPS. And so community is created in that way. There are artist receptions that happen monthly that bring people together. And there are, through the performances of bringing audiences together. So
what I'm hearing you saying is sustainability is more than just the environment. It really is, as the one model I'm reading here, talking about well-designed and built, and it's thriving, and it's fair, it's well-connected. Is that the kind of sustainability that you operate under?
We've been involved. This is the second year now that the FIPS has been organizing a broad partnership project called What We Need Is Here. And there are several organizations, arts organizations, community organizations in the St. Croix Valley.
What We Need Is Here.
What We Need Is Here.
Meaning?
That's a line from a Wendell Berry poem, Wild Geese. And what it means is that we should look to what we have here, what we have at hand, the people, the environment, and we should nurture that and support that and find what we need here. And we do believe that what we need is here. And we do, the logo that we have for What We Need Is Here has three different images on it. It's about the natural environment, the built environment, as well as the social culture.
We are going to take a break for national and state news. And Westside listeners, well, I hope you'll join us here. It's getting really interesting, but we would love it if you joined us as well. It's 1-800-228-5615. My guests are Anastasia Charton with the FIPS Center for the Arts in Hudson. Eric Wickstrom is a master's degree student at UW River Falls working on sustainable community development. And the head of the whole project, Professor Kelly Kane, teaches in the Environmental Science and Management Department. It's 1-800-228-5615. This is the West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. Our discussion this hour is on universities teaching about energy efficiency and doing it at the same time. We're focusing this hour on UW River Falls' efforts to go off the grid by 2012. Well, does that mean compostable toilets? Well, maybe not that, but the new University Center does collect rainwater and use it to flush toilets, and the St. Croix Institute for Sustainable Community Development is connecting its community to reducing the region's environmental footprint. The goal is to sort of create a community that's well-run, it's thriving, there's local food, it's fair, everyone likes to live there, and there's arts, and it's going to be kind of hard to create, and we're talking about how we can do that and what it might cost. You can join the conversation this hour. Please do by calling 1-800-228-5615. My guests are Kelly Kane, a professor in environmental science and management at UW River Falls. Just today, he became the director of this new St. Croix Institute for Sustainable Community Development. Eric Wickstrom is a master's degree student in the Sustainable Community Development Program at UW River Falls. And Anastasia Charton is the visual arts director at the Phipps Center for the Arts. And you wonder how come she's involved? Well, this is a community project. Sustainability affects a lot of communities in western Wisconsin where it's growing. Kelly Kane, a sustainable community. Give us a picture of what one might be.
Lots of different ways to characterize it. And we have, at the university, specifically chosen a community sort of context as opposed to a sustainability or sustainable development context. Simply because when we think about it, from a global issues perspective, all solutions are local. So when we think about the realm of influence that any of us have in our personal and professional lives and our civic lives within community, which I think, coming back to your question about what that community looks like, we recognize that it is collectively all of our personal, professional, and civic actions within a community that determines whether or not that community is contributing to the problem or becomes part of the solution. So as from a solution standpoint, they simply certainly are communities that are as compact as they can be so that they are walkable, they're bikeable, there's easy access between residential, commercial, public institution sorts of land use planning in the community. They are as self-sufficient as they can possibly be. I mean, when we look at it from simply an energy and from a food standpoint, the amount of dependency that we have on other places outside the community in order for that community to literally survive from an energy and food standpoint makes it not very sustainable if we continue to have food that on average, depending on which report that you look at, it ranges from 1,300 to 1,500 miles from field to plate for the average food serving.
And you have all these people leaving the community for work.
Correct. In the city of River Falls, we have somewhere between 50 and 60% of our workforce drives to the Twin Cities on a daily basis. And if you go out and sit on the edge of town, starting at about 5:30 in the morning, you can watch the stream of cars for the next 3 hours, 90% of which will have one person in them.
Is the goal to cut that amount?
Well, certainly. But getting people to, especially in terms of work schedules and in terms of coordinating something like that in order to get more than one person in a vehicle or to get mass transit in such a way that people could literally give up their cars, would certainly be the ideal sort of situation.
So how would you rank where River Falls and Hudson are right now?
We're a long way from sustainability. I mean, the fact that we are dependent predominantly for our food from very remote corners of the country as well as the rest of the world, the same thing is true in terms of energy. I mean, on a state basis alone, we are sending well over $10 billion a year out of the state of Wisconsin to pay for the energy needs that it takes to run our state. So when we think about budget deficits at the state level, and we think about how much money that we are literally sending out of the state, that if we even captured 10% of that and recirculate it within our own economy, budget deficits of $1 billion, $1.5 billion become history just from that energy standpoint alone.
Do you think people are getting a sense of this need, or is this a fringe group that thinks we should have compact communities?
I certainly think it was a fringe group. It is no longer a fringe group. It is very rapidly becoming a mainstream sort of sense of reality. I think both consciously as well as unconsciously. I mean, there are many people who are obviously restating the reasons why from a scientific standpoint. Here's the data and here are the trends that tell us that we need to do something else. The model that we're currently operating by is not sustainable. And as I oftentimes tell the students when we get to that question about what is sustainability, the short answer is the attempt to avoid unsustainability. It recognizes that we are so dependent in terms of energy, in terms of food, in terms oftentimes water. I mean, we're now having the discussion about whether or not water would be allowed to be pumped out of Lake Superior to go to the southwestern states of the United States. That is the epitome of a question that begs for unsustainability.
Unsustainability. Eric Wickstrom, you said you were going to work with communities and want to focus on the transportation side.
Yes.
How would that work, or what kind of ways could communities look?
Well, just trying, kind of basing my answer off Kelly, just trying to figure out ways that everybody can. One option is carpooling. Establish more, options for people to get to work. In the bigger picture, talking about compact communities, most people in the St. Croix County region travel into the Twin Cities. Is there a possibility for creating jobs here, or maybe inspiring people to move back to the cities? Understanding and presenting these questions to people, when it comes to higher gas prices and the options that they have to deal with that. So you
will go into a community and sit down with their planners and say, if you are going to make a road change now, better add a bike lane.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to what?
Or better yet, is the proposed idea, if it is a lane expansion, is it encouraging people to move out to, say for, our instance, Hudson or River Falls, or is it just delaying?
Keep those potholes there, huh?
Yeah, just a delay in the inevitable, yeah.
Well, I mean, the Department of Transportation has said the whole I-94 in the western part of the state needs to be rebuilt, totally rebuilt.
I kind of off that note, I have looked up some census information as of late, and the corridor between Baldwin Woodville exit to Hudson every day, there's approximately 15,000 people traveling westbound or eastbound in the evening. So there's definitely some conversation on the horizon regarding this issue.
What would be a sign that you see the communities, the smaller communities that have not so much impact by the bedroom communities of Hudson and River Falls, but what some signs that you see that the smaller communities are looking to change or to grasp the sustainability?
Oh, boy. How they're going to grasp this?
Kelly Kane, do you have any sense that...
Really, from a comprehensive planning standpoint, I mean, much of it has grown out of the smart growth legislation that has been at the state level. It says we will have a comprehensive plan in every municipality by 2010. And as Eric points out, and transportation is a major part of any of that. And so if people are going, as Eric pointed out, the idea of... We're seeing much of that as a result of jobs and the need to commute in order for people to have the jobs that they have. And one of the things that is part of the self-sufficiency definition is that you have to build an industrial base that provides jobs for that labor force in the local community if you're really truly going to be self-sufficient and sustainable over the long haul. But it also depends on what kind of industry that you attract to your community. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to develop industrial parks, to what degree are these small communities actually going out and inviting the kinds of industries that they want to come into their community that are symbiotic in nature, meaning that the waste product of one is a feedstock for the other. So if one has a lot of waste heat as a byproduct, find another industry that needs a lot of waste heat that can be drawn off of the waste stream of that other factory. Eco-industrial parks are in wide use around the world. It's more of a new sort of concept in this country to a large degree, but it's not hard to do if you really begin to think about the kinds of green technology companies that are really emerging onto the scene now.
Westside listeners, how is your community doing in talking about this, or have you not even started? If you want to join the conversation, it's 1-800-228-5615. Anastasia, do you have a role model city that you'd like to pattern River Falls and Hudson off? Is the goal to sort of be like a Twin Cities in that the people want to go there, only they just want to live in River Falls and stay there? Is that the goal? Or what do you want to pattern the community or the region after?
I guess the way that I would answer that is maybe I don't know enough to select a particular city, but what I would like to say is that I think that as changes are being made As building is happening, as road construction is being considered, the bridge that's going to go in between Minnesota and Wisconsin, Stillwater and
sometime,
Burkhart,
sometime.
It's inevitable that when these decisions are being made, that they be made thoughtfully and highly considered, and that all that we know now can be considered and incorporated into those decision-making processes, so that make sure that to be able to accommodate mass transit in building the bridge. There is LEED standards for architects in terms of building buildings. This is an international standard that there are architects trained in. Well, let's make sure that when we're building these buildings that we are making those right decisions. In my opinion, right decisions in terms of thinking about the impact that those buildings are going to have. Development is inevitable. People, change is inevitable. But how we go about making that change and making the decisions in a thoughtful, long term, thinking about, many generations down the line, what they're going to inherit, I think that's how we can do our best.
Are you talking individually to people too, though? Not in the big picture, but in the smaller
mm-hmm.
picture, right?
Most
in your
definitely.
Own home?
Most definitely.
Do something. You're part of the problem mm-hmm. if you're not?
Well, what we've done, this year we had a kind of kickoff. Kelly did a Sustainability 201. Last year there was a Sustainability 101.
We defined it.
Yes. Well, we defined it and explored it and got people engaged. And so one of the things that happened is an artist from Hudson, who's also in the Visual Arts Council at the Phipps Center for the Arts, came up with an art activity, a hands-on activity, where we sort of wrote promises onto stones of changes we were going to make. And some of the changes that people made were, I'm going to walk to church. I'm going to, buy a share in a local farm. I'm going to, what were some of the other ones? I'm going to bring a child into nature. I mean, these very simple acts, but as they accumulate and as people become more active and more conscientious throughout the decisions that they make in their individual lives and their civic lives, then that's when change can happen. And so that's really what we need is attempting. It's encouraging sustainable communities.
I'm reading in this one handout, Kelly, that you use, you could start a garden of significant size, not just a little garden on your patio, I guess. Buy a 2 to 3 year garden seed supply, raise your own chickens, become one with your bicycle. Kelly, do you ride a bike?
I do.
To work?
It depends on what my schedule is like for the day and what other errands that I need to handle.
Do you have any way of knowing how much energy you've saved by doing that?
I can certainly calculate it up from the number of miles per gallon that I save on a daily basis. I mean, I normally drive a little 96 Honda Civic that's rusted out and the motor won't die, and I get 30 miles to the gallon when I do drive it. So I'm close enough to town. We're about 3.5 miles out. Some days I walk. Some days I ride a bike. I admit most recently I've been having to drive a fair amount simply because of the kinds of meetings that I've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you ride a bike, Eric?
I actually walk to work every day.
You walk to work every day. Yeah. And how about you, Anastasia? Do you bike?
I do not. I bike for leisure, but I'm one of those people that lives a good 10 miles out of town. My husband and I each have about, he has a little bit less of a drive. But we're in the situation, too, where we've got young kids that, mm-hmm. we need to transport around.
So it's complex. When rubber hits the road and we say, mm-hmm. ideally, we want to do this, mm-hmm. but when it's, when it actually comes to doing it, mm-hmm. it's much harder.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it is about, but then you make the decisions consciously within that. Okay, I need to drive, so I'm going to drive a fuel-efficient car or, eventually be able to save up so that you can get a hybrid or,
Or do you hang your clothes out on the line?
Oh, I do that.
To dry? Mm-hmm. Do you guys do that? Anybody hang their clothes out? Or, little things that people can
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it ranges from hanging the clothes out to being willing to invest in a photovoltaic system for your home or putting up a wind turbine or investing in a much more efficient vehicle. Raising a much larger garden, providing that much more percentage of your total family food sort of mm-hmm. budget. Mm-hmm.
Speak a little bit about cost here. This is not cheap to make some of these changes. If you're going to, say, live 10 miles out and have to bike into work, you're probably going to need to either move or change jobs. That wouldn't be cheap. If you're going to build buildings like you built at the university, this is going to cost. There won't be reduced cost doing this. And some are going to say, you're going to raise my taxes to do this.
But that's the really, and I, going back to the words that Anastasia used in terms of the thoughtfulness of the process, it is having the conversation that recognizes that, yes, you pay a little more up front in order to have a much larger payoff long term. Part of what has gotten us, I think, into the situation that we are in, that we're even having this conversation, is the short-term sort of economic conversation that we have when it comes to investing in public infrastructure. What's the cheapest by which we can get this done with the quickest payoff, which generally follows a path of least resistance of a model that doesn't think in terms of long-term payoff, is not patient in terms of recognizing that if we put 10% more in now, we will get 50% greater return over the long haul. And that's clearly what the University Center building is all about. It is more expensive, but there's virtually no doubt that electricity is going to double in price over the next 5 to 10 years, if not sooner. And the Chicago Board of Trade is already has three-digit trading ready for oil. There are many analysts who are saying we will be lucky to get out of 2007 without hitting $100 barrel oil.
Mm. Now, you have your own coal-burning steam plant at the university?
We do.
And is that going to change?
We are in discussions right now and looking. It currently burns coal, oil, and natural gas, depending on the season and depending on the price efficiency. And we are actively in discussions right now with a variety of sources for biomass fuel for that plant that would come from a combination of switchgrass and or wood chips from a pelletizing plant that's currently being built in Mason City, Iowa. And the intent is, and the discussions as they are occurring, is that that type of plant would move into the local vicinity of western Wisconsin as well to really cut down on the transport sorts of costs.
Yeah, that wouldn't make sense to transport from Iowa.
No, but in terms of the carbon, in terms of the carbon issue, as well as as the science appears to be getting the same level of BTUs out for a much lower price and zero carbon, it would be a phenomenal turnaround for us.
Now, I mentioned earlier compostable toilets. Why don't you have some of those those things are they're clean, they're not smelly. I mean, there are some really good models out there.
Yep.
The university's building, not.
Under current state plumbing codes in a public commercial based sort of building, that's a very, it's virtually impossible to do.
Why, would you think we should make a case for that?
I certainly think that we should, from at least initially, from the standpoint of showing that technology can work as a demonstration sort of project, to show that it can work in that type of a setting, in that type of a building. But we weren't able to get everything, recognizing that this building was planned 5 years ago. And so 5 years ago, we were talking about many of these technologies that are now becoming mainstream just within 5 years period. And so we had to go with the designs that we had from 5 years ago.
Now, a lot of people here have been, or not a lot, some people have talked about solar or the photovoltaic type of energy. Is that even possible here? We have so many clouds. Could we do it if we wanted to do solar?
Undoubtedly. we put in 2.7 kilowatts of photovoltaics. My wife and I, Ruth, and I put in 2.7 kilowatts, and it's providing, depending on the season, anywhere from one-third to two-thirds of our total electrical demand at our own home. So, yes, it can work, and the price of photovoltaics are coming down dramatically.
And so it... it's not paying for itself yet.
Not yet, but it is dramatically reduced our bill, and we're feeding back to the grid everything that we're not using.
Oh, what about old buildings? You know, everybody's got old buildings. Is it cost-effective to retrofit those things? Or
undoubtedly. There is much that you can do. Some of the cheapest money anyone will ever spend is on the insulation that it takes in order to hold on to the energy that you're already putting into the building. Rather than producing new energy, saving what we already have.
And he talked about this combination you have with the power, River Falls Municipal Utilities, the public power. So you are all working, well, the power companies must get some renewable energy, but
yeah, and
you're helping them design new plans?
They are, so besides our partnership with FIPS, FIPS Center for the Arts and the St. Croix Valley Community Foundation and some of the others, Wisconsin Public Power and River Falls Municipal Utilities are two of our most important partnerships. To give an example, the green blocks of electricity that the students bought.
Tell me, define a green block.
Green block is buying blocks of, for residential, it's sold in 100 kilowatt hour blocks, and you pay then, for instance, the electricity provider that we're with, we pay an extra dollar for per 100 kilowatts. That then tells you that energy that's coming in is coming from renewable energy sources, primarily turbines. And so the money that the students spent on green blocks in the student center, WPPI turned that money back around. It was right at $20,000 and paid for the green kiosk that we now have in the student center that talks about the energy efficiencies of that building and what people can do in their personal and professional lives. So they basically gave the students back the money that they spent for the green block electricity.
Yeah, they paid for that whole student center, didn't they? 33 out of the 34 million.
Yeah, they paid 30 students about $35 million.
All right. Well, Kelly Kane, a professor in environmental science and management, thanks so much for coming over.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
He's director of the new Sustainable Development Project. Eric Wickstrom is his student in the master's degree program there at UW-River Falls. Thanks so much for coming over.
Yeah, thank you for
having
me.
And good luck to you in your projects out in western Wisconsin. Anastasia Sharton is with the FIPS Center for the Arts, and lots of connection there with the community on sustainability. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And people can contact you and get involved, I would assume.
Yep. Contact me or go to the FIPS website, www.thefips.org.
There we go. Earlier in the hour, we talked to Chancellor Don Betts. Thanks to Brenda Breedall for help producing this program at River Falls, to Jim Oliver and Dale Peacock for on-air production. If you'd like to know more about our upcoming programs, you can go to wpr.org/WHWC. That's also where you'll find an audio archive of this and our other programs. Thanks so much for joining us. This is The West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. This is 88.3 WHWC Menominee Eau Claire and 88.7 WRFW.